know he can't meditate. If you afraid, then come on with me. And I know what you came here to do. Knock, let me see you get loose. It's going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What's up, Dog Pound? Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble, and Jason Gibbs here with you on this Thursday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Day two of the rookie training camps. They are all here. They were out on the practice field today. There are only 20-some odd bodies here.
Only.
So, I know, right? Yeah. So it's very hard to accomplish on the football field anything at full speed, full pace. A lot of this, as we talked about yesterday, is walkthrough, introduction, reintroduction to the expectation and kind of baby-stepping them and spoon-feeding them everything all over again, because when the veterans report, it's pedal to the metal.
Yeah, and I'll ask you, what they are going to be on the field at some point these next few days. What can you even do with that few amount of people?
Jog through.
Yeah, okay.
Jog through. I don't think at all they're going to be in helmets, shorts and t-shirts, and maybe shells to mimic their outfit that they had on in OTAs. But it's going to be a jog through. It's going to be slightly competitive, and as I mentioned, this is the spoon feeding, give it to them again, review opportunity for these young rookies because once the veterans get here, there's no time for dumb questions. There's no time for redos. There's no time for screw-ups. Although there will be dumb questions and screw-ups and reviews, you can't spend a lot of time with these young rookies asking questions. That's what this offseason was for. That's why they were prepped in some cases with homework. KJ and I yesterday asked, were there quizzes? I'm sure some guys might have walked back into a quiz of some sort, so the coaches can really gauge how much time and effort you put into your playbook. And then by getting them out on the field, this for some rookies, and I'm not saying he's out of shape at all, but for a guy that's 350 pounds like Danny Shelton, you can tell immediately based upon the tempo with which he's practicing, his movement, his breathing. You know, if he's coming off the field after three plays, Danny didn't do much in his time off. So it's a gauge for these guys to do everything they can. And because it's not physically demanding like training camp was or will be once the veterans report, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these young players are maybe even running gassers, practicing themselves, doing a little bit extra either on the treadmill in the weight room or out on the practice field in spikes, doing a little bit more, running some half gassers to get their body ready, because once those veterans report, it is the true official start of the season.
Now I'm just wondering, I know there's some things you can make up in a week. I'm wondering if for some reason, and I doubt any of the Browns players did this, but if they just like didn't do conditioning for a month and you come, can you fix that problem in a week, or
no.
Is that something where you'll be behind the whole time?
No, you'll be behind the whole time, and because I was a player and I would come into practice into training camp in shape because of football, and we've talked about it all the time, but being in shape and able to play in the game shape are two different things. Like, you can come in and have run miles and stairs and hills and pulled and sled drags, and we saw I think Marlon Moore pushing his smart car. All those great things only add towards the condition that you can come in, but there's nothing like going out there and playing the game and forcing your body to be at 100% every single play, both, and I say your body, both physically and mentally, executing mentally and performing physically with no letdowns, because this is your profession. It is a shame for guys to come in out of shape.
Yeah, and here's one thing I always wonder, and this is just kind of maybe even a dumb question, but it is the rookie week where dumb questions are allowed, so I'll ask this. But, a big deal was made
five more days.
When Johnny Manziel wore a helmet at his pro day. It was like a big deal, like a revelation.
Yeah, and shoulder pads.
No one had ever done that. When I see these guys conditioning and doing all this stuff, why is no one like wearing pads or a helmet? Why do these players not condition in pads? Obviously, there's a reason, because you don't see anyone doing it.
Right. And that's a very good question. In some cases, because in the off season, at least, and through OTAs and in minicamp, you know, Brad Mellon, the equipment guy here in Cleveland, I drew a blank there. Their shoulder pads aren't even in their locker yet. And right now, their shoulder pads may not be in their locker yet. When the veterans report and they're all measured or remeasured or assigned their set of shoulder pads, and they need their, you know, the pads for their, you know, their legs and things of that sort, then they'll get those shoulder pads. And at that point, you will see guys after practice either take their shoulder pads off and run in their helmet. And that's more about, you know, breathing, being under control with the weight of that helmet on their head. Or you may see guys vice versa take their helmet off so that they can breathe, but wear the weight of their shoulder pads, you know, the running motion, you know, which is obstructed, you know, just slightly in shoulder pads, and leave their, you know, run in their pants. So it's all based on what the comfort level of these players is. But a lot of it is they don't have access to those pads to run in them, and they do everything they can. That's why I said hills and pulling chains and you know, flipping tires and pushing cars, everything you can to get your body into the best shape to come in. And then once you're here, it's really maintenance. Once this training camp starts, it's all about survival. And I know for me, I would report to training camp. I think at my heaviest, I probably reported at like 252 pounds. By the time the season was over, like week 17, I'd be like 239 because you're not lifting the weight that you used to lift. It's basically you build yourself up and then you tear your body down. And that series of spikes and falls, ebbs and flows, is the NFL season and what it does to your body.
And I'm guessing as the years go by, and I think we're already in the middle of it, but you know, college off-season conditioning programs have gotten a lot better. I mean, obviously the coaches' hands are tied at the college level because there's a lot of time of year where they're officially not allowed to work with these guys at all. But you know, just being around the Alabama program when I was down there for a few years, they have this thing called the fourth quarter that just destroys the players in the offseason. So I imagine that the physical shock is not as big as it used to be.
No,
for some of these rookies, but it's got to be different in some way.
It is different. It is different in a lot of ways, and I think because of the speed of the game has increased, the amount of pressure I believe has increased now that you're a paid professional. And as I mentioned yesterday on the show, you're competing, these 20 somethings, you know, 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds are competing against grown men who've had the opportunity to play this game, some cases 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Like Xavier Cooper learning from Randy Starks, a guy that's in, you know, got double digits in the league. Xavier Cooper's competing with that guy for playing time. So it's 32-year-old versus 22-year-old. You know, that's a 10-year discrepancy. So while he has wear and tear on his body, he's a well-oiled machine on be able to come into camp in shape, both mentally and physically, and has the experience of playing and being a Pro Bowler in the National Football League, whereas Xavier Cooper's got all that from college, trying to bring that here, mimic that, but the young, fresh mind and body to get them to get the most out of him to beat out a guy like that. So it's very interesting, and I want to share with you guys today the Ohio Business Machine Hot Topics. We want to hear from you, 216-578-0850, about these Ohio Business Machine hot topics. What three players must have big years for the Cleveland Browns to be successful in 2015? So what three players have to have a career type of year for the Browns? And also, too, training camp starts in 1 week from today. What's your favorite Browns training camp memory? Please share that with us, 216-578-0850, or you can tweet at the show, as always, at Browns_daily. Later in the show, we're going to hear from the Browns defensive line coach, Anthony Weaver. I'm sure some comments about Danny Shelton and Xavier Cooper, two young players that will, and the addition of Randy Starks that are going to make big impacts in that room. Later in the show, in the second half of the show, we'll hear from Liz Matthews, Seahawks reporter for ESPN 710 in Seattle, as we continue to preview the opponents of the Cleveland Browns this upcoming season. And it's going to be a tough schedule.
Yeah, that's a fun one for the entire AFC North. Is the Browns unfortunately drew the short straw and they have to go to Seattle.
They do
this season, which is, you know, easily maybe one of the toughest places in the NFL to play, and just that time of year, it's going to be tough. I mean, it's a tough looking game, and I'm working on a story now with like pivotal stretches for each AFC North team, And pretty much all these pivotal stretches include Seattle at some point. Because when you throw Seattle in the mix of a stretch of games, it just adds to the difficulty. And they're clearly – they've been one of the best teams of the last few years in the NFL. And what they bring back, it looks like they should be just as good this year. I don't know what about them has gotten worse. Maybe the offensive line.
Maybe,
because
yeah.
they got rid of Unger and I think they lost James Carpenter to free agency. But they're going to be a team that it's hard to pick against them in the NFC this year.
It'll definitely be hard to pick against them. And one question that I have for Liz when we speak to her later in the show is, you know, the makeup of that division is not so much what it has been. There's a lot of question marks beyond Seattle in that division. What St. Louis, you know, team is going to show up this year? As talented as they are, they've got question at quarterback. You look at the Cardinals with Carson Palmer. Are they going to be able to be that double-digit win team again? And as we spoke yesterday to Joe Fan from 49ers.com, what are the 49ers can win three games in some people's eyes. The 49ers can win 10 games in some people's eyes. It's all based upon their perspective. And, you know, no one knows what they're going to have out of Jim Tomasula there and what type of year Colin Kaepernick's going to have.
Yeah, you know, the team that interests me is the Cardinals just because – I feel like their margin for error is very slim.
I agree.
And their season really does hinge on Carson Palmer, not just getting healthy, but also like the fact that he's 35 years old and that it could go away. I mean, he could just not be as good as he used to be. And I think that is a big thing. They have great defense, but it's a matter of can they be on the right side of these victories as much as they were last year? It seemed like they won a lot of close games last year, and I don't know. But then again, they got to the playoffs. And they were, you know, shorthanded because they're going with their third-string quarterback.
I mean, you bring up a great point and something that I've made about the Arizona Cardinals as well. And if you look at the NFL as a whole, how many other teams are in a situation just like the Cardinals? Because if you don't have your franchise quarterback and your margin for error is very slim, as we heard from Mike Sando yesterday, ESPN NFL Insider, when he created that tiered platform, a guy like Carson Palmer needs to have a good season, needs to play very well, and have pieces around him play very well. And if you look at the league, you know, outside maybe 10 quarterbacks in the National Football League, all of those teams are in the same situation as the Cardinals where a lot of things have to go right. They have to have their quarterback play superior, and I'd say that's the same for the Cleveland Browns, mm-hmm. for them to have a good season. Because if the quarterback struggles or you have struggle at the quarterback position, really, if your quarterback ain't right, nothing's right.
Right. And they have a decent situation maybe in Arizona if Drew Stanton has to go. I mean, there's worse backup quarterbacks in the league, but clearly it was just once Carson Palmer got hurt last year, things just didn't seem – they had to really – that defense really had to carry them and keep them in games, but they just didn't have the ammunition to really do any damage in the playoffs, and that's why Carolina just was able to win that game, even though Carolina was, what, a 6-10 team?
Yeah.
I mean, they just – and it didn't even seem that close of a game. It just seemed – it seemed like Carolina was the team that was 11-5.
Exactly. It really was. And again, as I've mentioned, we want to hear from you all show long. 216-578-0850. Our Ohio Business Machine Hot Topics again. What three players must have a career year for the Cleveland Browns to be successful in 2015? I know there is a lock of who my number one is. We also want to hear, training camp starts 1 week from today. What is your favorite Browns training camp memory? Early in the week, Jim Donovan, you know, shared some of the memories of, you know, different locations when the Browns used to be, training camp, other places. I'm trying to think of my training camp. My best training camp memory was, as I told Jim on Monday or Tuesday, was actually reporting to training camp as a paid professional. To me, was a very very memorable day, because it was the opportunity for you to kind of validate that you've made it.
Yeah, I can imagine it. I can't relate to it because I've never
been
in that experience.
Right.
But I wonder, is for you, just real quick, is it weird at all to practice in front of a large group of fans in this kind of setting and maybe get chewed out in front of a bunch of fans if you messed up? Or is it to the point where you don't even notice the people out there?
Initially, you love it and you notice it. And in some cases, you thrive off of it at practice because it mimics what First Energy Stadium or playing in front of a crowd does for you, to want to be perfect, to want to practice very well, practice at a high level. But after, by the dog days of training camp, quote unquote, you don't even notice they're there. you might, you know, during warmups or your stretch on the sideline, you might give some high fives. You're not signing on autographs. You might have little, you know, little conversations with individuals from day to day on the sideline. But once the whistle blows or the horn blows, you know, you're out there. They don't even exist anymore. It's as if, and then, but you do miss them when they're not there. So then when you do have a closed practice, you go out there, you're forced as a player, and the coaches are forced, you know, to ramp up that energy because you're missing the music, the radio broadcast, the thousands of people there cheering you on. You absolutely miss it.
And I imagine it's different from team to team. Obviously, the Browns have great crowds at all their training camp practices that are open to the public, but it must be interesting for like a team like the Saints, who are going to West Virginia to kind of practice. And there's fans there, but you're not going to have the amount of diehards. Yeah, and I mean, there might be people that are just interested about this football team that's randomly in their city, but you're not going to have the thousands that end up attending these Browns training camp practices. So I imagine for you, I don't know if it was different between team to team, but I'd imagine it's a different flavor no matter what team you're playing for in the NFL.
Sure, yeah. San Diego had a good turnout. San Francisco's was all right, and Green Bay, I got their midseason, like, you know, week three.
So you didn't get to ride the bikes?
I didn't get to ride the bikes. I didn't get to enjoy that. Yeah. And it would have been something nice to add to my resume. Well, we're going to take our first time out, and as I've mentioned, we want to hear from you all show long, 216-578-0850, or tweet at the show, @Browns_daily. Training camp with the rookies is now underway. My question for you, three players that must have a career year or a solid season for the Browns to be successful in 2015, and what is your favorite Browns training camp memory? Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble, Jason Gibbs here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.